Hi and welcome to the official audiobook of Stenhouse, Growing Up in Edinburgh and Beyond, by Bill Rectangle. Book 1, copyright 2026, Bill Rectangle, all rights reserved. This book is a work of literary memoir. Some names and identifying details have been changed to protect privacy. No part of this publication may be reproduced, stored or transmitted in any form without the prior written permission of the copyright holder, except for brief quotations used in reviews or criticism. Author's note, this manuscript is written as literary memoir. It keeps close to remembered places, people, feelings, family stories, and the atmosphere of growing up in Stenhouse, Edinburgh. Dialogue is recreated in a natural way from memory and family telling, so that scenes can be read as living moments rather than bare notes. Chapter 1, The Beginning of My World. I was born in 1977, but the beginning of my world does not come back to me like a clean date written in a Bible or a neat family fact pinned to a page. It comes in flashes, warm light caught on wallpaper, the orange breathing glow of the gas fire, the smell of soup thick in the room, a grown-up voice carrying from somewhere I cannot quite see, the feeling of being very small inside a house that seemed enormous, safe and busy with hidden life. That first world was not only made of people and rooms, it was made of atmosphere. It was the hum of ordinary family life, turned almost magical, because I was at the age when everything still seemed to contain a second meaning. Around then, my rally boxer meant a lot to me. It was more than a bike in the practical sense. It was movement, independence, and the first feeling that the neighbourhood could be mine in loops and circuits rather than only in short supervised bursts. I could go out on it and feel for a little while that I had command over distance. A bike gives a child that illusion of power. It makes the world answer faster. One sunny day when I was about 5 or 6, I decided my mum deserved a wee break. She was a stay-at-home mum then, but there was nothing easy or idle about her days. She was nearly always in the house because she was the one keeping everything running. There was the cleaning, washing, shopping and cooking, along with the upholstery work she did for friends and family. She entertained friends, made endless cups of tea and coffee, prepared lunches and dinners, and sometimes helped my dad with his books as well. She seemed to be busy from morning until night, always doing something for somebody else. We often went to the Cross or to the shops at Cheshire for groceries, and sometimes I would go with her on my rally boxer, treating the journey like a wee expedition. One of the places she regularly used was John Bain and Sons, the butchers at the Cross. Several members of the Bain family worked there, and they had got to know me because I was often in the shop with my mum. They would kid me on, have a laugh, and generally make a fuss of me. I think they quite liked having me come in. My dad gave me 10 pence a day as pocket money for sweets, and that week I had managed to save 2 days' work. 20 pence felt like a small fortune to me. More importantly, I had started thinking about how hard my mum worked, and decided that I would use my money to buy something for our tea, giving her one less thing to worry about. The plan made perfect sense in my 5-year-old mind. I had seen my mum hand money over the counter and leave with meat and food for the family. I did not understand prices or the real value of money. I simply assumed that you went into the shop, asked for what you wanted, handed over a few coins, and that was that. So I climbed onto my rally boxer and cycled down to the Cross by myself, my 20 pence carefully carried with me. I walked confidently into John Bain and Sons and asked the butchers for some of the food my mum normally bought for our tea. Then I proudly held out my money. The men behind the counter found the whole thing absolutely hilarious. They were kind about it. They explained that 20 pence was not quite enough to buy the sort of meat and food my mum usually took home for the family dinner. They could see, though, that I was completely serious and that I had come down there with the best intentions in the world. Instead of sending me away empty-handed, they offered to sell me one of the apples from the display for my 20 pence. So the grand plan to provide the family tea ended with me cycling home carrying an apple. After that, it became a standing joke. Whenever I went back into John Bain and Sons with my mum, dad or sister, the butchers would remember the day I had arrived on my Rolly Boxer with 20 pence in my hand, completely convinced I could buy the family dinner and give my hard-working mum a well-earned break. It was funny, but the thought behind it had been genuine. Even at that age, I could see how much my mum did for all of us. I had wanted, in my own small and slightly confused way, to do something for her. Chapter 62. Tom Wilson and Radio 41. One of the biggest influences on that changing atmosphere was Tom Wilson. His show Stepping Out on Radio 4th felt like a weekly signal that something new was happening and that you could tune straight into it from your own room. It was not just a radio programme, it felt like a route into a wider Scottish dance culture that was gathering speed all around us. For a lot of us, that sound felt electrifying. Dance music was different from the records that had defined earlier parts of childhood. It had drive, repetition, atmosphere, and momentum. It made you imagine clubs, lights, movement, and crowds, even if you had not yet properly entered that world yourself. The radio created pictures in your head long before real experience caught up. A bedroom could suddenly feel bigger because the music in it seemed to belong to a much larger world. Tom Wilson mattered because he did not sound like somebody talking down from above. He sounded involved. He sounded excited. He helped make the music feel close to hand, Scottish, local, and alive, rather than imported from somewhere else and handed down to us second hand. He championed DJs, records, and acts in a way that gave the whole culture a sense of reality. This was not fantasy. This was ours too. Radio mattered even more because our technology still felt half analog and half new. We taped shows onto cassettes, copied them for pals, wore out batteries in portable stereos, and carried music between rooms and buses by hand. At home, there were VHS player growing piles of tapes, the first more affordable CD players in some houses, and games machines that seemed to announce the future every Christmas, from the Game Boy and the Mega Drive to the Super Nintendo a bit later on. Somewhere far beyond our own horizon, the inventor of the World Wide Web had already invented the World Wide Web, but for boys like us, the real network was still tape to tape, radio to bedroom, pal to pal. There was almost a mythic quality to how people talked about the show. Hortel the transmitter, getting the signal right, taping sets, passing names around, all of it gave the music a physical presence. It was not passive listening. People wanted to belong to it. Boys who might not have spoken much about feelings would suddenly speak with real intensity about a record, a mix, or the sense that something important was happening in Scottish dance music. There was a pirate side as well. Stations like Boomerang FM carried rougher edges of the culture, more breakbeat, darker hardcore, Rotterdam sounds, and records that sat outside the safer mainstream. Between Radio 4th and Pirate Radio, the scene reached you in the house, on tapes, in conversation, and in imagination. The clubs gave it a body, but radio gave it a bloodstream. It carried the thing into bedrooms, buses, school talk, and private anticipation. For me, that mattered, because I have always connected deeply to sound and atmosphere. Long before I was fully inside that nightlife world, the music itself was already doing the work. It was shaping expectation. It was helping create an emotional landscape before the physical one had fully arrived. A track could make the city seem bigger. A mix could make the weekend feel as if it had already started.